Okay, so hi everybody. I'd like to welcome you all to the second day of this year's Sexuality Studies Capstone event. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Claire Sears. I'm an Associate Professor of Sociology and Sexuality Studies at San Francisco State, and I have the great pleasure to be the Director of the MA Program in Sexuality Studies. So today, at Capstone, we come together as a community of faculty and friends and students and family to celebrate the accomplishments of our wonderful second year MA students who have worked so hard over the past 2 years to produce their culminating experience projects. So today we're gonna hear them present on their original thesis work and their creative projects. Three students are presenting today on topics that include the impact of rural geography on sexual identity, racism and reproductive injustice in BIPOC communities, and explorations of joy, interdependence, and tenderness in chronically ill and disabled communities. In a moment, I'll go ahead and drop a program in the chat. But before I do that, I wanna just quickly review how this is gonna work for us today. So each of our three students will present their work. My colleague, Dr. Alexis Martinez, is gonna preside over the presentations. So Alexis will introduce one student, the student will present their work for about 15 minutes, and then we'll open it up for a question and answer session that will also take around 15 minutes. The Q&A does function as the university's requirement for an oral defense of a thesis project, which means that the first question has to come from a faculty member. But after one of us has asked our questions, we'll open it up for general Q&A and discussion. Then we'll move on to the second student, and then the third. When it's time for Q&A, you can get our attention either by raising your hand or even better, using one of the little icon reaction buttons. There are three screens, but Alexis and I will flick through them and call on you as quickly as we can. Aside from the Q&A though, if you could keep yourself muted for the whole time, that would be great. Holding a session like this on Zoom does have its challenges. Obviously there are technological challenges, somebody gets kicked off, but we think we know what we're doing. Again, if you could stay muted, we are recording, and I'm really, really happy that so many of you can join us who otherwise might not be able to. So I'm gonna go ahead and drop the program in the chat, and I'm also gonna hand things over to my colleague, Dr. Alexis Martinez, who will get us started. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Welcome, everyone. I'm pleased to be here today to moderate, and even more pleased to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Ron Holt, who will speak today about his thesis, The Impact of Rural Geography on Sexual Identity. His first reader is Colleen Hoff. His second reader is Rita Melendez.
Okay, thank you so much for coming today. I see that there's people from all over the country who came for my presentation, so it means a lot to me that you took my invitation. Thank you so much. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen with you right now. So my name is Ron Holt, and I am doing my research project was on the impact of rural geography on sexual identity. And so my research question was, what were the experiences of Midwestern rural queer youth around coming out? What type of information did they get and from where? And how and where did they get support? So, you know, I chose this topic because when I was a young Midwestern queer youth, I struggled tremendously with my sexuality. I felt alone, isolated, unsupported, and afraid as I came to terms with being gay. Coming out to my father was so excruciating, I almost literally didn't survive it. And I don't want other queer youth to go through what I went through. And so I therefore created this research project to see how today's Midwestern rural queer youth navigate the coming out process and to see what resources and support they need to allow a healthy and supported development of their queer identity. And so my survey was part of the MA program here at San Francisco State. And for my methods, I used an anonymous online Qualtrics survey through San Francisco State that was a mixture of qualitative and quantitative questions. 45 participants from three college campuses completed the survey. And if anyone wants to know more about how I made these college connections to recruit participants, I'd be happy to discuss it during the question and answer session. And so I had a total of 45 participants. The majority identified as either bisexual or pansexual. Most identified as female between the ages of 18 and 21, and most were white. About two-thirds of participants either had a high school diploma or some college, and the rest of them had either a bachelor's degree or above. Approximately 75% of the participants were from a hometown population of less than 50,000, and approximately 25% were from hometown populations of greater than 50,000. Most of the participants were from the state of Nebraska. Wayne State College had the most student participants, followed by Kansas City University in Missouri, and then followed by Northeast Community College in Northeast Nebraska. And so there are three themes insights that I'd like to share with you from my data. So roughly half of the students indicated that a lack of support had negatively impacted their queer identity, and the majority that were impacted were from hometown populations of less than 50,000. There were four qualitative themes due to a lack of support. Those themes include remaining closeted, delayed self-acknowledgement, needing support, and internalized homophobia or transphobia. I also found that friends and college support, such as the school's Gay Straight Alliance or GSA, were important in providing information regardless of their geography. So in rural areas, peer support from a GSA can be particularly helpful for queer people as they navigate such things like internalized homophobia, systemic homophobia or transphobia, the coming out process, and higher levels of conservative ideologies. My results indicate just how critically important that friends and college GSAs are as both sources of information and support for queer youth. The second result that I want to share is that nearly half of the students reported religion impacted their queer identity in a negative way. None reported religion having a positive impact. The overwhelming majority who were impacted by religion came from hometown populations of less than 50,000. And of interest is that a great majority of those who were negatively impacted by religion chose to remain closeted at work. So there were three overlapping themes that I found about how the impact of religion on sexual identity, and those were internalized homophobia or transphobia, delayed self-acceptance, and that being queer was bad or sinful. And so the third section is that participants from hometowns with a population above 50,000 reported higher levels of being completely out compared to those from smaller towns. This finding actually supports the claim by Swank et al. Done in 2012, who found that compared to more urban areas, lesbians, gays, and bisexuals in rural areas are more likely to remain closeted. Being entirely out in larger communities could also be due to more community resources for queer people in large areas, having city ordinances against discrimination, and company policies protecting queer workers. As far as coming out at work, my results indicate that a great majority of working participants actually felt that the work environment was supportive of their queer identity, yet only about half were actually out at work. So my research indicates that the level of outness in the workplace is significantly higher among those from towns greater than 50,000 versus smaller hometowns. In fact, 100% of participants from larger towns were out at work, whereas less than half from smaller communities were out at work. And so what's interesting is that my study found that those participants who had parental support were much more likely to be out at work regardless of geography. In fact, nearly 80% of participants who were out at work had supportive parents. However, for those that were not out at work, only about half reporting having parents who were supportive. So whereas historically rural workplaces are found to be oppressive for queer people, this present study and research shows that having parental support actually mitigated some of this workplace oppression. So we can see how critically important parental support is in the coming out process. So as far as next steps, I'm going to focus on four that I think is going to really help rural queer young people. So we know that the findings point to the vital role that education and advocacy play for the queer communities in rural areas. It is essential that queer affirming resources are made available both in schools and in the broader community. So since parents were found to be a vital source of support for queer youth, providing resources for parents to assist them in their roles as advocates, I think is crucially important. So parents can organize local PFLAG support groups. Other resources could be online, educational and supportive resources that should be made readily available for parents who may be learning of their child's queer identity. This is also especially true for those parents who want to learn of ways to create a safe environment in the event that their child comes out to them. The study also found that a majority of the study students depended on and received support from their college GSA regardless of their geography. Therefore, we know that GSA support appears critical as students leave home and go off to college, where they must find a support network that extends or replaces the support that they hopefully received from their parents. GSA groups should therefore be expanded to both rural, junior, and senior high schools in order to provide critical support for queer or questioning youth. The findings in this study also highlight the essential work that religious institutions must undergo in order to transition away from being places that inhibit or even harm queer youth. So churches and faith institutions in rural areas need to focus on providing affirming support for their queer youth. Churches could also focus their queer affirming outreach really to all youth, since some youth are in the vulnerable stages of questioning their identity. The early coming out period is also a crucial time in which faith institutions could provide vital affirmative messaging. Churches can also provide supportive resources to allies in their quest to support the queer community. And lastly, rural high schools should focus on changes to the curriculum that will help foster affirming education on sexuality, sexual identity, and diversity. These classes would help benefit queer students and students who do not yet openly self-identify as members of the queer community or who may be struggling in the early phases of self-recognition. These classes could also help allies learn more about the queer community and how they could provide a safe and welcoming environment. Education could also be offered through the local PTA or school board, so parents and community members could learn how to become better advocates. So implications for next steps, as I just outlined, I think represent a good starting place to help rural queer youth. So I had a couple of limitations in my study, but I think the most important one to focus on in this talk was the generalizability of the present study being limited by sample representation. So despite attempting to reach a diverse sample, the study relied heavily upon the recruitment of active GSA club members on the Wayne State College campus in Nebraska and the Kansas City University campus in Missouri. Recruitment from GSAs has implications of underrepresenting several groups that may not be involved in GSAs, and those may include those who do not yet identify with the queer community, perhaps do not feel comfortable disclosing their sexuality, and the fear of repercussions of coming out in a smaller town. So based on what I've learned about the impact of religion, I think that future research should explore in more detail how queer youth are impacted by the cultural effects which emanate from religious institutions. In addition, educators, mental health providers, and medical providers who work with students from rural areas need to deliver information and support about sexual identities to all young people, regardless of their stated identity. So that's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much for attending. It means a lot that all of you came today. And now I look forward to the question and answer.
Right. Thank you so much, Ron.
No, thank you.
Okay, I am going to open the Q&A with a question from faculty. Rita, I see your hand up.
Thank you, Alexis, and thank you, Ron. That was a really great presentation. I so appreciated hearing your thesis, and I especially appreciate your next steps and hearing about the GSAs and the importance that they play and how expanding them would be useful. I kind of want to take that idea, but also move into something you mentioned earlier in the presentation, which was internalized transphobia. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what your participants said with regard to that, and how, if possible, could GSAs play a role in kind of addressing some of the stigma around transgender individuals and the internalized transphobia that you mentioned?
That's a great question, Professor Melendez, and thank you very much for asking it. So internalized transphobia, for those who don't know what that means, is that it basically just means taking the hatred or fear or dislike of trans people in society and internalizing that and making that part of our own. So internalized transphobia, I think, can really benefit from having a GSA on campus, because I think studies have shown that GSAs on campus can help other queer students help navigate the coming out process, dealing with oppression within society, and also dealing with the homophobia and transphobia that they see. And so I definitely think that having GSAs both in the junior high and high schools, as well as in the colleges, can definitely help those who are struggling with internalized feelings like that to make them feel better. And I think getting that started at an earlier age will help them as they develop into their queer identity. And so the other question I think you asked is, can I give you a couple of examples? And one of them that really stuck out to me is, so I had three qualitative questions. One was, what was your coming out experience? The second was, has a lack of impact, or has a lack of support impacted your identity? And the third was, has religion impacted your identity? And there's one particular person who answered both of those questions as, it made me hate myself. And that really kind of struck me, because I think a lot of people internalize society's negativity about them and hold it as part of their own. And, you know, having them feel like they hate themselves is a horrible thing to have to read. But it also shows just how important it is that we have support from a GSA, from our friends, also information from the internet, and also from our parents. So thank you for that question.
Thank you, Rita and Ron. Okay, give me a moment as we scroll through. I see, as there's, so I am going to, I saw Jonna and Olive, so in that order, go ahead, and then we have about 10 more minutes or so for questions, so go ahead, Jonna.
First of all, hi, Ron. Congratulations. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
I have two questions. The first is, if I remember correctly, at the beginning of your presentation, you mentioned that the majority of students in your group were female. And I'm wondering if you had any commentary or insight on if you think that that contributes, or not contributes, but is a reflection of culture in the Midwest regarding the LGBTQ community. It seemed like when I lived there, it seemed it was more, even though it was difficult for everyone to come out, it seemed women had an easier time coming out than men. And then my second question is, if you can speak to the role GSAs can play as we look at a lot of these quote unquote, don't say gay bills, like what we're seeing in Florida right now.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jonna. Both of those are. Thank you so much. And so, so as far as like what the GSAs can do, yeah, there is a lot of homophobia and transphobia that we're seeing, and bills are being enacted introduced across the country. And I think that can have a lot of negative impact on students who are struggling with their sexual orientation or their gender identity. And so I think the purpose of GSAs can be twofold. One is that the GSA can actually help the student deal with the society's negative expectation towards them, and to help them kind of work through that. And then also, I think the GSA, especially like maybe the faculty advisors of those GSAs, can help support them and be advocates in their small towns or their communities to help them kind of counteract what they're seeing in the news. The other question that you asked, and I thought it's an excellent question, is that, yeah, you're right, about 67% of the people who took my study at Wayne State College in particular were females, right? And about 22% identified as trans. There was only 7% that identified as cis male, all right? And I think that was maybe two people at Wayne State. And I think the reason why that's occurring is that as we're seeing more and more negativity brought up in society about queer people, more and more males in particular are being victimized and discriminated against and rejected, especially in rural areas where they're supposed to be seen as more machismo. And so I think that there are actually less people that are involved there, because not so much that it wouldn't help them to be supported in the GSA, but also them being associated with it, I think puts them at higher risk of discrimination and victimization in rural America. Thank you for that question.
Olive?
Hi, Ron. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It was so exciting to see how the process all came together. I would love to hear you elaborate more on your methods, and then also with how you recruited participants.
That's an excellent question. Thank you for that. So my method, I did the anonymous online Qualtrics survey with the assistance of my professors and my committee. So that was very helpful. But what people don't know is that for the past 20 years, I've been going back to the Midwest and giving volunteer talks in rural areas to help queer youth. And by doing that, I have made some excellent connections with the GSAs that have been there on campus over the decades. And because of that, they know that I'm a trusted person. And so when I approached them saying that I wanted to go ahead and do these studies, both at Kansas City University in Missouri and also at Wayne State College in Nebraska, they knew who I was, and they knew that I was a trusted person and that I had good intentions. Because asking students to expose very vulnerable things that I asked to a stranger out in San Francisco, I think would be hard for them. And so by allowing their student advisors to say, hey, this is a trusted person, he's an alumni from our school, and he's here to help us out, what they were able to do then is take my email that I sent to them, send it out to their GSA presidents, who then sent it out to their members, and then knowing that I was a trusted person, they were able to answer it. So I was very happy that I got an N of 45, especially when you're talking about such sensitive things in rural areas of the central Midwest. Thank you for your question.
Hi, Ron. I have a question for you, actually. And then after I'm done, Kelly, I see your hand is up, and we will have time for both of us. So first, thank you for the important work. It was interesting to hear. And I just really also want to say that I know you started this program during the pandemic when we were virtual, and you've just, after going on sabbatical, it's really nice to come back and see the success that you've had with doing this work. So just want to acknowledge that. And I want to ask you specifically, and I'm not sure if you spoke to this, but I'm curious if everyone in your sample or was from the rural places growing up, or if you spoke to people who grew up in an urban place and then came to a rural place for college, and how that might have impacted them, their identity and their experiences, or if that came up in any capacity during the course of your research.
You know, that's a great question, Professor. Thank you very much for bringing that up. And so basically 3/4 of the participants came from hometowns of less than 50,000, and 1/4 of them came from towns of greater than 50,000. I would say the participants from the state of Nebraska, the great majority of them were from small towns. And when I say small towns, I mean less than 10,000. Some is less than 500. And so they were very, so they were from very small towns. Now, in Kansas City University in Missouri, they draw from students across the country, right? And so I think they had a larger percentage of people who came from larger towns. And Kansas City itself is not a small town, but some of them did come from smaller towns. And so to answer your question, I think the majority of them did come from rural hometowns of less than 50,000. Hopefully that answered the question. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is a unique sample that way as well.
It is.
Yeah. Okay, Kelly.
Hi, Ron.
Oh,
Thank you for a fantastic presentation. That was really awesome. As you know, Ron, I am an adolescent medicine doctor, huge LGBTQ advocate in our community, and I am from rural Michigan. I also have affiliations with, unfortunately, some very conservative churches. And really, my question for you is suggestions for how we go in and educate within very conservative church structures, number one. And number two, within the schools, how do we advocate for getting GSAs into the schools and also educating the teachers and staff around the topic?
Oh, Dr. Huggett, $3 million questions. So, great questions. So here's my thought is that my experience has been churches and schools and actually other organizations usually do not want to introduce queer-related topics unless it comes from students. And so my experience is that in order to start a GSA in a college campus or a junior high or a high school, which I truly believe that we need to, and also in churches, is that it's got to be student driven. And so if there's a group of students that are interested in getting involved, then they could go to their campus coordinator or their campus counselor and say, hey, listen, we've got some groups or we have some students here that are interested in some having maybe a GSA on campus just to kind of maybe not only help ourselves, but maybe be able to provide education for others. And generally speaking, that is hard for the schools and the churches to say no to because it's usually driven by them. So I think that's an excellent idea. Yes, there's always going to be pushback, but change is never easy. But as we know, and as you know, doctor, from the patients that you see, queer youth are at much higher risk of mental and physical health issues, as well as thoughts of suicide because we don't have resources for them. So I think it's very important for us to do that and to be an advocate. And yes, we're going to run into roadblocks, but we have to continue the good faith effort so that we can save as many lives as possible. I hope I answered your question.
You sure did. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Looks like we have time for one more question from the audience, if there's anyone who would like to raise their hand. Any last questions? Don't be shy.
Can I jump in? I see,
yes.
Dean, I think had a hand up.
Oh, great. Thank you, Claire.
Yeah, sorry. I was trying to figure out how to like raise my hand in the technology world. I'm from Nebraska. We're a little slow here. Ron, my friend, amazing presentation. I'm so proud to call you my friend.
Thanks, man.
You're being this incredible light in the really dark place. And you're the kind of person that gives me hope for the future. And keep it up. My question is, I'm doing a lot of work, as you already know, on the Omaha Reservation in here in Nebraska. And there seems to be a more inclusive understanding or appreciation of the queer community there. Have you thought about doing any research within the within the Native American communities here in the United States?
You know, I think that's a great question, Dean. And one of the things that I would have liked to have done is if I had more time for further research or maybe other research in the future would be to include more demographics and more groups. And so I would love to do that. But like I talked about earlier, it's really hard to kind of get in, right? Because usually when you're trying to do surveys on campuses such as that, you've got these adults who are saying yes or no. And so if it's not student driven, or if you don't have a connection the way that I did, it's really hard to get in there to be able to do these surveys, especially with younger people. And so I love your idea, Dean. If there's any way that you have a connection with them, I'd be happy to work with them and do a survey on the reservations. I think that would be awesome and much needed. And you're told.
Let's make it happen, buddy.
Let's go. Okay, dude. Okay, man. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Okay. So again, thank you so much, Ron, for your impactful presentation and for everyone who joined to support him.
Thank you.
At this capstone event.
Thank you so much. It means a lot to me.